When I was in elementary school, our class went to the Huntington Library. Do you know this place? Mm-hmm. One of my favorite Potters exhibits there at times. That's my brother Joe Wujic, sometimes goes there for plant shows. And it's a beautiful garden and a beautiful house. And a lot of the time they do museum pieces there. And we went for a specific one. They had an exhibit on Abraham Lincoln. And it was just a really fascinating place to go and visit. They had all of these artifacts that were there, none of which I remember, except for one specific one, and it stands out to me so clearly. It was a lock of Abraham Lincoln's hair from when he was a baby. Did I just hear somebody yell gross? Because yes, that is kind of weird, right? It was baby Ham Lincoln's hair in this tiny little frame, and they used to do that all the time. Does anybody have a lock of hair from one of their kids? Or she says gross, but it's probably one of your kids' hair, right? It's probably your hair that she has, right? And teeth and all sorts of things. We keep the things that mean the most. They have sentimental value after all. And I thought, boy, it's weird that we do this as I was bagging up Jack's first haircut hair this last month. And I was putting it in and I said, that's just such a bizarre tradition, but it makes sense because it's baby Jack. He's cute and he's sweet and I want to keep this memory. But when does it start getting weird? Like if I'm doing this on his fifth haircut, that gets weird, right? I mean, that's what happens when you go to the barber, is it just goes on the floor and they throw it away. I hope. I don't know what they actually do with it, but I hope that's what they do. They just get rid of it, right? At some point, there is no worth to it anymore. I was thinking about this when I shaved the beard, because I thought, is there any way that I should keep this? But just hear me out before we go.
No, no way.
I thought, I'm taking out all of the guesswork for some sort of large bird as they're making their nest, because a bird could have lived in there anyway and nobody would have seen it after a while. But I thought, yeah, a condor could use this and they're practically done with their nest. But no, I threw it away. But don't worry, I'm not keeping my hair saved up from my beard. But we do that with our little ones, you know. The other reason you do it, of course, if you think about Lincoln, is because they're famous. And it's not just that it has sentimental value at that point, it actually maintains monetary value. And just to give you an idea, I went to a small internet boutique auction site. It's called eBay. I don't know if you're familiar with it. You can go on right now and buy 11 of Abraham Lincoln's hairs for $5,000, which, I mean, I think you gotta say that's a steal, right? I mean, it's less than $500 per hair to own one of the weirdest things ever, right? A bag of Abraham Lincoln's hair. Maybe that's too expensive for you guys. A lot of music fans, you can buy a full lock of Elvis's hair for only $1,200. And I kind of feel weird sharing this with you guys because you all seem so interested in this deal. I know you're all going to go and outbid me online now to buy this yourselves. It's weird, right? I mean, I'm looking at faces, and it's weird that we do this thing. But I know there's somebody out there, otherwise it wouldn't be on eBay, that says, I have to have this bizarre thing for my collection of weird stuff. And they put money on it, right? It's a lot of money if you really look at the price of it. So all this to say, I'm going to start selling my hair on the internet. It's kind of where I'm going with this. I'm just kidding, of course. But the issue is, you know, I'm not famous. I have to be famous in order to have value. But the other thing that makes things valuable, of course, is rarity. And I feel like I already have that with my hair. It's getting rarer every single day. And so pretty soon I'll have just this one last bit and then it sells for thousands on the internet, you know? The other thing that determines value, of course, is quality. And I don't have a lot of them, but they're great. So maybe that buys me something. But if you really think about value, what determines value is really just a couple of things, isn't it? Quality, rarity. Really the most important one in this case, and in a lot of cases, is whose it was. And I think that's really the most important one for us to really look at when we determine value, is whose it was. And whose are we? You know, our gospel today, it's been following the same theme for a while now, and we talked last week that that you are all, and this helped that we were doing Western Day too, but you are all wanted men and women by God. God wants you, and he pursues you just as much as we pursue him. And it's following this theme today because it comes right after Jesus heals a crippled man on the Sabbath. And there's this whole debate about who's more important, and was the Sabbath made for man or man for the Sabbath? And Jesus keeps saying that these people are so important to God that it's okay to heal on the Sabbath. And so now he's sitting at this banquet table and he's watching people sort of jockey for position. And you know, you've all kind of seen this. We do this pretty similarly in our context. If there's a guest of honor, people try to sit next to that person. You know, imagine going to a wedding and you know, if you're seated in the back, what the people kind of think of you, and if you're seated close to the front of the bridal party, what people kind of think of you then, and it's an honorable thing. You know, you take it and you kind of feel like, well, I guess they think pretty highly of me. We do this in everyday life all of the time. Think about where your parking space was near the office. You know, you can determine, are you the CEO if you're right up front, or are you way in the back? You know, we do this all the time. We don't want our names on our badges or our shirts. We want our names on the building itself, right? And it's all about position. And we jockey. Well, that's what we do. We determine our value based on our position. And so we kind of rush to get the seats of greatest value. And what Jesus is seeing here is that these people are rushing for these spots. And they're determining their value by their ability to get close to the front. And so what Jesus says is, you know, imagine you're at a wedding. When you go to a banquet and you sit at the best seats, it's going to be kind of embarrassing when the host is like, ooh, buddy, you're going to have to move to a different seat, not the good one. You are not that important. And he says, that's going to be an embarrassing thing if that happens to you. So don't jockey for the best seats in the house. Go to the worst so that they say, what are you doing all the way at the end of the table? Come to the front. And he says, when you invite people to a banquet, you know, don't do the ones that are going to invite you back. And we all sort of do this in reverse, like, well, they invited us to their party, so now we have to invite them to ours. But don't do that. Invite the ones that are the outcast in society, the ones that are deemed completely valueless to you. And Jesus puts a spiritual spin on this. This isn't just something for social etiquette. Jesus isn't teaching a Miss Manners class, after all. Jesus is speaking about something spiritual here. Because he says, those who humble themselves will be exalted, and those who exalt themselves will be humbled. Those who think they're the greatest in the kingdom are really the least, and those who are the least will be the greatest. And what he's seeing here is that the people have a completely different understanding of what is valuable than what the kingdom believes is valuable. You determine value by evaluating it, and their evaluation system is so different than the kingdom's evaluation system. So how does the kingdom of heaven determine value? Well, you don't have to go much further than the Jeremiah reading, the first one today. I love this book. I love Jeremiah. He is so snarky, and I believe that God looked into his brain and he said, yes, I can use that. And so he's got, and if you've ever gone through the book of Jeremiah, read it in a translation that is just really easy to understand, your jaw will drop and you will say, no, it doesn't really say that, does it? But this book is filled with so much just jagged cuts and very heavy stuff. And it cuts the fat from the marrow, and it's exactly what the Bible talks about, that the Bible is a two-edged sword. And Jeremiah is such a powerful book, and I love our reading from today. Basically, God says, you know, tell me, what did your ancestors find fault with in who I am? Was it when I rescued them and brought them safely out of Egypt? Was it when I walked them through the desert where nobody even can live or visit and they were safe? Or when I gave them this wonderful land? I love that. You hear the snark in that? And he says, what was it about my love and kindness and power that the people gave up on? And then at the end he says, look around. Go east and west, go everywhere in the world and try to see anybody having done what you guys have done. You exchanged a living God for sticks and stones. And even heaven balks and leans back to look at what you've done. You have given up the living God of the universe in exchange for idols. And there's a word, an adjective that he keeps using with all of these idols. The first person to shout out it out, special prize at the end. What word does he say? These idols are?
Worthless.
Worthless. Rick gets a prize at the end of the service. There we go. Worthless. Over and over. Same word, over and over. These are worthless idols, which in itself is a little bit redundant because idols are completely worthless. But there's a statement in there, and I don't want us to lose it. Because he says that the people have exchanged worthless idols only to become worthless themselves. Wow. This is a God who promises to never leave or forsake you, who counts every hair on your head, even the locks that are being sold on eBay, he's counted. And God has that much love for us, and he looks down and he says that in exchange the God of the universe, they have chosen worthless idols only to become worthless themselves. Oof. That's heavy stuff, isn't it? How do we become worthless? By exchanging our worship of God of the universe for idolatry. Humanity can become worthless by worshiping that which is not God. Let's talk about human value, because we take it almost for granted in our culture that every life matters, that there is a dignity of human life. We take that for granted, that it's a certain inalienable right that humanity has value. And that's part of our culture. Why is that part of our culture? Well, it certainly isn't a worldwide cultural trend. You know, talk to our family at the Nest. These kids are outcasts because clearly if they are orphans, they must have done something wrong in life. And that caste system still allows for outcasts. Value of human life. Go to the Middle East where Islam teaches that people are beasts of burden. Chattel, value of human life. But the value of human life, that every human has value, comes only from one place, and that's the gospel of Jesus Christ. Where the gospel has gone, the understanding of human dignity and value comes with it. So much so, as a little bit of an aside, when Gandhi was trying to come up with a way to do civil disobedience and teach people that humans, all humans mattered, he went to the scriptures, the Hindu scriptures, and found nothing that would support it. He had to go to the Gospel of Matthew and go to the Sermon on the Mount for his basis for why every human life matters. Because where the gospel goes, there we understand that God, as creator and father, has bestowed his dignity on every human being. But in what we do, and what we exchange for worshiping him, that can make us worthless. And idols can take a lot of different forms, can they not? But what the gospel tells us is that if you want to have value in the kingdom, You find it in knowing who you belong to. Your value is incalculable because you belong to Jesus Christ. He bought you with his blood. He died for you, and so each and every one of you are not just valuable, but beyond value in his eyes. Not just invited to that banquet table, but seated in places of honor as his children and co-heirs with Jesus Christ. You are of infinite value because of whose you are. And so don't exchange the God of the universe for worthless idols. It makes us worthless. I don't know what your idols are. I can come up with 10 or 12 of my own. You know, what I'm going to wear, how impressive I'm going to be to people, what I drive. All of these things, these are idols. If your value comes from anywhere aside from whose you are on the path to worthlessness. Your value comes from him alone. And if you are allowing anything else to evaluate who you are, that's a path of destruction. You have value because of who you belong to, whose you are. And let's pray to the one that saved us, that bought us, paid such a high price for us. Let's take a moment to consider the greatness of that price.